This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. And by Unmanned Systems and Solutions, USAS, a combat veteran-owned company that repairs all types of drones. If you're a consumer who owns a drone, a small business using drones, or a drone manufacturer looking for sophisticated repair, distribution, and warehousing, look into USAS. For more information, visit unmannedsas.com/UAV Digest. You're listening to episode 189 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, looks like we've got a good show this week.
I think we do. Lots of interesting stories this week to talk about.
Yeah, well, let's see. We've got lightning strikes Aurora, pilotless UAS, drone home inspection, police and drones, and we've got a couple of videos of the week. So I think with that, we probably should get started.
Let's get started.
Well, our first story comes from TechCrunch.com. Aurora's massive lightning strike Vertol UAV got one step closer to reality. Aurora Flight Sciences' Lightning Strike XV-24A Subscale Vehicle Demonstrator, or SVD, aircraft had its first successful test flight at a U.S. military facility, and it's Vertol, vertical takeoff and landing.
Right.
But what's special about this?
Well, this is a test program, a test flight program that's been going on for about a year now, and this is just concluded. As you mentioned, David, it's a subscale model, and the full-scale aircraft has actually been renamed. They used to call this the Lightning Strike VTOL X-Plane, and I think that's what we called it when we talked about it a year ago. Well, it's been designated the XV-24A by DARPA and the U.S. Air Force. Of course, DARPA is funding this program. But the full-scale vehicle is much larger. It's a 12,000-pound vehicle with a 61-foot wingspan, and it's characterized by a lot of electric motors.
And the XV-24 is a tilt, unlike the V-22, where the Rolls-Royce AE turboshaft engine is used, the XV-24 is not a tilt rotor, but a tilt wing. We're going back in time. One of the original vertical takeoff and landing aircrafts in the 50s and 60s tested by NASA as X-planes were tilt wings, which means the whole wing, the rotors tilt, the rotors are fixed to the wing and the whole wing tilts, instead of like the V-22 where the engine nacelles tilt and the wing stays flat. And it's our favorite type of power, electric.
Yeah, it uses the same Rolls-Royce turboshaft that the V-22 Osprey does, but in this case, it drives three Honeywell generators, and then the generators power these 24 variable pitch ducted fans that are on the wing and the canard arrayed out. It's kind of an odd looking craft.
It looks like a 1900, early 1900s Bristol box kite.
Oh yeah,
which had a bi wing canard and a bi wing. It really does look like a Bristol box kite. Every time I've looked at it, I went, "Yeah, that looks like a Bristol box kite." And Google Bristol Boxkite, we'll put a link to the show notes. But if you compare the two, if you stick little electric motors in between the wings, you get the XV-24.
Interesting. Now, the full-scale flight test program is scheduled to begin in late 2018. So they've got some time to do the work necessary to go from the subscale program to the full-scale. So we have a little time to wait until we see the full-scale version of this, but that'll be pretty exciting. I wonder what that will sound like, too, with those 24 ducted fans all running. Yeah,
probably like a bunch of DJI Phantoms all flying at one time.
Oh, great!
And the other thing about it is, it's not just building the aircraft; they've got to analyze all the data that they've accumulated for the last year.
Mm, right.
So, I mean, there's two reasons for the extended break between them. So, speaking of breaks, this I thought was the funniest headline all week. And this was InsideManSystems.com. Airbotics becomes the first company granted authorization to fly UAS without a pilot. And my initial reaction was, it's an unmanned aerial system. It doesn't have a pilot. But as a matter of fact, it does. I had to think twice about this because flying an unmanned aircraft without a pilot makes perfect sense until you realize it's really a remotely piloted aircraft and the pilot is back in a box somewhere.
So this is a follow-up to an item that we mentioned two episodes ago in episode 187. And Aerobotics is the Tel Aviv-based company that has developed a system. The system is made up of three parts. There's the Optimus drone, which has a 30-minute mission capability, 1 kilogram payload. And then this airbase, they call it automated base station. This is kind of the landing box where the drone can come in, land itself autonomously, exchange the battery inside this landing box, also change out payloads. That's the second part of the system. And the third part is software that lets the users control and manage missions. Now, they've been using this in two applications for some time now. They've been operating this beyond visual line of sight at Israel Chemicals and also at Intel in Israel. And they've accumulated more than 10,000 flight hours and automated flight cycles. So that's given the local regulatory authority, David, some confidence in this system.
Yeah, and we've gone from pilotless aircraft to we're getting close to autonomous aircraft. And, you know, this is getting awfully close to delivery by drone capability kind of stuff, which we keep saying that is never going to happen in any real time, but at least not by me because I live within an airport. But it's interesting that we're keep moving along and we keep testing, and testing proves things, and suddenly people are getting more comfortable. You know, when we started this, if you can imagine someone talking about an aircraft flying around Israel that was doing it by itself, I think people would panic.
Hmm. Yeah, we do seem to be creeping up on it. And you kind of raised an interesting point, David. Maybe the strategy here is, you know, when you're confronted with something that the general public is concerned about when it comes to drone or package delivery by drone, things like privacy and then practical things like, you know, how do you keep the neighborhood dog from running away with the drone and, you know, all of these things. Maybe the strategy is just keep talking about it, just keep it alive and keep chipping away at it. And you know, next thing you know, 3-5 years from now, maybe it'll be a reality.
Well, we'll see. The next one is kind of, we've talked about in the past as a future use of drones, and here it is. It's come along, and State Farm back in 2015, and I remember us talking about this, tested in St. Louis and Atlanta drones for roof inspections. Well, according to the StarTelegram.com in Fort Worth, the Insurance Council of Texas has estimated that they had a bad storm that insured losses will total about $300 million, but they're using drones to check roofs.
You're right. Farmers Insurance has conducted a roof inspection with a quadcopter. Looks like a DJI Phantom. It's a pilot program, and it's very interesting. They send the drone up.
Excuse the pun.
Yes, that's right. They send the drone up, and it uses the GPS that's built in to identify the corners of the roof that it's inspecting. That lets them calculate the square footage, the area of the roof, and then they can actually use the drone to go down and take a closer look and inspect for, in this case, hail damage. Now, there's a couple of real good reasons why they take this approach. One is that it's much faster. The inspection is much faster than sending an inspector up there to do it manually. And the other advantage of doing it by drone is you don't have somebody walking around on top of the roof, which, of course, can cause additional damage to the roof. So I can see the insurance industry really looking to make good use of drones for these kinds of inspections, and probably a lot of others as well.
Again, this is one of those mission creep things that we've talked about. 2015, when we first talked about it, it seemed like a radical idea. Now it's becoming pretty commonplace.
Yeah, the neighborhood seemed to respond pretty positively to this inspection. Of course, the homeowner liked the idea. As I recall from the article, the teenage son, I think it was, of that family was just really impressed by the technology and the drone coming out to their house, and the neighborhood came out to see what was going on, and it was all positive all around from the description we have in the article. So, yeah, I think we'll see a lot more of this.
Okay, well, our next couple of stories are a little sort of negative, sort of positive, but they involve police actions. First one was from bbc.co.uk, and this was from our friend Micah on our Slack listener team. Last year, the UK police received 3,456 drone reports. You know, and the first time I looked at that number, I was very suspicious of it.
Why were you suspicious, David?
3,456.
3,456. Well, the prior year doesn't, it comes close, I guess, now that I'm looking at this. In 2015, the number of reports were much lower. They went up a lot in 2016. In 2015, there were 1,237 reports. Good thing there weren't 1,234 reports, I guess.
Yeah, the reports have run the gamut, like invasions of privacy, which I think that's a running thing. Disputes between neighbors, I guess that's flying your drone over your neighbor's property. Aircraft near misses, and that's a lot. And of course, we've talked about this one too, that criminal elements are quick to use things like prison smuggling, meaning flying the drone over the wall.
Another example of bad guys is apparently some burglars using drones to investigate a house, see if the house is occupied or not. This is the kind of stuff that's most scary to me. Is when the criminal element finds ways to use this technology to be even more effective in their misdeeds. So the UK, of course, has rules like most other places when it comes to drone use. No beyond visual line of sight, altitudes under 120 meters, roughly 400 feet. Can't be flown near airports or airfields, not within 50 meters of people or property, and not flown over crowds or built-up areas. So it's kind of the usual stuff that we see.
But it is a dramatic over 1 year, a doubling of the reports. Now, does that mean there's actually that many more events? I don't know. Or is it more commonplace? It's more common for people to report things. So we'll have to see. I guess next year it'll be 6,789 reports, right?
Perhaps. So the Department for Transport is taking a look at all this, seeing how these numbers are growing and trying to decide if they need to implement some new measures. Article points out they're even considering the creation of a criminal offense for misusing a drone.
All right, well,
you like doing this, don't you?
I can't help it. You know, that state of yours is just...
Connecticut's in the news again.
Yeah, Connecticut's in the news. You know, as I put in the show notes, those radicals in Connecticut. Now, our first weaponized drone came from this state. And immediately the Canadians, I'm sorry, to all of our people up north, the Connecticut, what are you when you live in Connecticut? The Yankees in Connecticut.
There you go.
The Yankees decided to set up some rules about weaponizing drones. However, they have allowed now police and fire to use and law enforcement to use drones, and they're allowed to weaponize the drones.
That would be the case under this bill if it were to make it successfully through the state legislature. This obviously came about because of that Connecticut teenager that had some videos that went viral, the handgun weaponized drone and the sort of flamethrower drone. So the state legislators did what they always do, which is start to pass some laws. But in this case, under the proposed law, the ban on weaponizing drones doesn't apply to law enforcement. So that's kind of an interesting and somewhat scary topic. The idea under the bill is that something called the Police Officers Standards and Training Council would be responsible for actually creating guidelines on how law enforcement could use drones and weaponized drones. And then they would send those guidelines back to the state legislature for approval. Now, currently, as far as we know, no state in the U.S. allows weaponized or lethal drones. The closest we come is North Dakota, which does permit law enforcement to use less than lethal weapons. So that'd be things like stun guns or tear gas or something like that. So it's hard to say where this will go.
If you're weaponizing an aircraft, here, this is what I was thinking about. You're weaponizing an aircraft. You change the word drone to aircraft, and suddenly you got the FAA up in arms.
Right. It seems like if drones are aircraft, then whatever we currently have in place, well, it seems like we repeat this a lot, doesn't it, David? Whatever we currently have on the books that regulates the weaponization of aircraft for law enforcement use, it ought to apply to drones, too, I would think.
Well, I guess we'll have to find out. We'll see what they actually have to say. You know, legislation has to go into effect, and then somebody needs to protest it, and then we need to find out whose jurisdiction it is. So, you know, like I said, I really wasn't expecting to get a law degree when we started this podcast. But let's talk about some drones for good. Since we left with North Dakota, let's move over to Minnesota. And minnesotawoods.umn.edu, researchers test drones to spot invasive plants in Minnesota. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture and the University of Minnesota Extension are investigating the use of drones for invasive plants like vines that can be incredibly destructive.
This is a real problem, and I don't know if you all see this kind of problem where you live, but I know we do here with vines that are not native plants, and they attach themselves to trees, grow up, and basically smother the tree and kill it, in which case it falls down oftentimes into the road. So locating these kinds of invasive plants so that they can be eliminated, it can take a lot of time, unless you're doing something like using drones to help find them, which is what we see here.
Yeah, and we have them too. We've had, you know, and in this day and age of, you know, agriculture and internationalism and stuff, invasive species is a big deal. Like, there's certain pythons now in Florida in the Everglades that don't belong there. There's fish species, those jumping carp, you know, some of the other ones that have tracked over and do damage. So the best way to look at a forest is above the trees, not in the trees. So good for the University of Minnesota. Hopefully they're successful with it, and maybe they can move it to other parts of the country.
Yes.
So we've got a webinar panel on April 20th. I'm Max.
We saw this from GPS World. UAV manufacturer SenseFly joins this April 20 webinar panel. It's a free 60-minute webinar. This is going to cover a broad range of issues concerning sensor integration aboard a flying platform. They say in particular they're used for commercial purposes. This is 1 p.m. Eastern Time, April 20th, 2017. And they note that webinar attendees will have the opportunity to ask direct questions of the speakers, both beforehand during registration and, I guess, live during the event. So it's free. It's 1 hour on April 20th. This might be an interesting thing to sit in on and participate. We'll have links to it in the show notes.
Yeah, you retirees can sit on it. I've got to work.
Yeah, we have an advantage when we have all that, quote, free time.
Well, we've got two video of the weeks, Max. Both of these came from our listeners. The first one was Nine Royals 2017 Racing Drone Edit. This is pretty cool. This is the Nine Royals event in Italy with snowboarders and free skiers. Yeah, I didn't know that skiing backwards suddenly became a popular sport.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's big. And
well, that's because you're in New England. You would know that.
We get snow here. This is a Team Black Sheep video. And I have to say, boy, the videography skills and the flying skills here, I think, are just really superb. Very, very good. But this is a dramatic kind of event. With these snowboarders and free skiers doing all these tricks and things. And they're doing it in a environment that's, it's up in the mountains. It's beautiful. The ramps and things that they're flying over, skiing up, sliding down, all of that are very impressive. So it's a great video. Apparently, the event this time was covered entirely with FPV racing drones. So we'll put that in the show notes as a video of the week.
And we did get some, is this really feedback? When this was actually, our feedback would be from Bob Schmidt, who is in charge of UAV Propulsion Tech, one of our sponsors. And he got a new press release from Hirth. Successful flight of Hirth 4201 EFI gasoline engine on Martin UAV VBAT. I like the looks of this thing, but Hirth Motors have been working together with the power of the VBAT transitional vertical takeoff and landing UAV with an air-cooled two-stroke boxer engine.
Yeah, this is kind of a different sort of engine type than we usually talk about and see. We're not talking electric here. This is a 15 horsepower. It's 183 cc's. The VBAT is a really interesting craft, fixed wing, but it's vertical takeoff and landing. Long duration. This is like an 8 hour or more duration with a 5 pound payload because it can take off vertically. It's got almost no footprint. It has what they call hover and stare capability during flight. So this thing can actually fly over to some target and then go vertical and just sit there and hover. The engine is interesting as well in that it actually communicates with the flight controller on the VBAT. It also records parameters, engine run parameters during flight that can be used for later analysis. It's a really kind of interesting combination, this Hirth engine and this VBAT.
I like it. I like that whole hover and stare thing. You know, you fly it someplace and you can sit it there. And it's got a fairly long endurance, so it's a very useful vehicle. Both military and civilian applications would be out there for it. So good for UAV Propulsion Tech. We're happy to have them as sponsors, and we're happy when they're successful, like what we see here with the VBAT.
Yeah, and we have a video of the VBAT that we'll put in the show notes as well. Be sure to look at that.
Well, I guess with that, Max, we should wrap this up. Thanks to Bob for sending us that article and sponsoring us. And where can they find us online?
Well, of course, you can visit us on our homepage at the UAVDigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, just visit the UAVDigest.com/189. We'll have links to all of the articles that we talk about, as well as the companies involved, and obviously the videos that we mentioned. You can watch them right on the webpage.
And of course, you can find us multiple places on the internet. The first place we'd like you to join is our listener team, and you can do that by going to the UAVDigest.com/team, or if you just want to send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com, Max and I will be happy to set you up for that. You can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook at facebook.com/UAVDigest. We love for you to send articles, feedback, and videos of the week, and you can do that again at our email address at feedback@theuavdigest.com. If you can, leave us some reviews. Our iTunes store, or Stitcher.com, or Google Play. That way other people can find us. You can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store, or you can become a patron of the show at Patreon.com. So with that, I guess I'm going to say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.
This episode was sponsored in part by Unmanned Systems and Solutions. 30 USAS technicians repair all types of drones in their 120,000-square-foot professional drone repair facility. USAS also offers full-service operations consulting and programs for commercial and government users. Visit unmannedsas.com/UAVDigest to learn more about how to get your drone repaired.